My name is Daryl T. I'm from Boston, Mass, the Boston area. Before I start my message, I'd like to thank my overwhelming support, which I didn't think I was going to get it. See, I came down on a bus, two buses, matter of fact. We organize two bus trips every year to these conventions, and I just want the Boston, Mass area to stand up and be recognized. They supported me. See, they prayed with me. They had prayed with me before I should. It happened a long time ago, you know. Anyone may join us regardless. You know, I want to talk about that anyone, you know, because I'm that anyone, you know. You may gather that from my story, which I'm about to share. It all started, like, when, at the age of 13. I was 13, and my brother's friend, who was 11, his mother had took us, and we went to go visit somebody up in a hospital, a chronic disease hospital. And, you know, as boys, we wrestled and all like that. Just so happened that this one particular evening, we was in the back of the car wrestling, and he was on top of me and held me down. And like, he did a move that I was unfamiliar with. you know, and like, well, it was, you know, he was grinding me, you know, and like, it was like, I got heated up all of a sudden. You know, I knew it wasn't right, so I tried to push him off, but he was too strong for me, and like, I gave in. You know, I gave in because it felt good, you know. I had a wet sensation come over me, you know. It felt like euphoria. It was a good feeling, something I never felt before. So after that point, I wanted it to continue, you know. So as kids, we used to, me and my brother used to go up his house. When his mother leave, we had my brother watch out for his mother in case she come back while me and him be in the bedroom, play wrestling and stuff. And from that point on, it got kind of graphic, you know. And as I was growing up, going through high school and stuff, he said he didn't want to do this anymore. And like, I couldn't understand why, you know. This was the only thing I felt that was like escape. You know, I was escaping from all my past, present, and future. This is something I loved, and he wanted to stop. You know, so I was in high school, and just so happens that year I was about to graduate. And like, I can remember this particular bathroom on the second floor of the high school where everybody would go, and you know, it was a bathroom where you would go for excitement, gambling, smoking, whatever, drinking, and all like that. And like, I wanted to be a part of that before I leave high school so bad, so bad and stuff. Because I was growing up, I was one of those good kids. You know, I did all my work, I was active in school and everything, and I just wanted to do something before. I had to go in that bathroom before I graduated, you know. I heard some people talk about, you know, going down on a $3 bed. Back then they called it a tray, you know. See, I graduated in 1975. I'm talking about whole way back, you know. They called it a tray bag, and I remember waking up that morning asking my mother for a dollar. I needed this dollar. You know, I was gonna buy something in school, something to eat or something. I needed this dollar, and she gave me this dollar, and I felt good about that. You know, and I went to school, and I gave up that dollar. They told me to meet them in the bathroom at this certain particular time at this, when the bell rang. And I did that, and they had brought some herb, you know. And I was in this circle in the handicapped bathroom. I was in this circle, and I watched them, how they opened it up, put it in the paper, and rolled it up and all like that. And I would just, you know, they lit it up, and it was coming around to me. You know, now I was watching. I was watching what they did with it, how they did it and everything. All I knew, they put it up to their mouth and puffed on it and blew smoke out. So I did that and started choking, you know. And they patted me on the back talking about, you don't need no more of this. You don't need no more of this. And I said, yes, I do. Bring it around again. I was going to get my dollars worth. Yeah, this is my first time in there, and they ain't gonna kick me out of this. So it came around, and I held that in there. I held that smoke in, and like I got that feeling back again, you know. And then like they raided the bathroom of something. All I knew, we had to get up out of there, and go back to class and stuff. And in that classroom and stuff, I felt like I was in a different world. I raised my hand to answer this question, and my words started stumbling, you know. And I thought it was funny, and I had the whole class laughing and stuff, you know. So, because that wasn't me, but I tried to answer that question so bad, and the teacher just told me to put my head down, and I'll be all right. And, you know, and I did that. Upon graduating out of high school, I got up with some people and got introduced to cocaine, sniffing it and drinking it and stuff, and that was my escape also. Also, I told you about the story about way back when. From that point on, when I got out of high school, I wanted to find that feeling once again. I ended up going to diverse clubs. I started meeting people, and I got that feeling back. I didn't care who I slept with, how I slept with them. I just wanted that feeling back again because I was hurting inside. You know, I was hurting from a feeling that someone did to me a long time ago, and I just didn't know how to escape out of it. You know, so I went on with that path. I went on to get introduced to smoking cocaine. I was just escaping from myself. I didn't know that there was a program out there. So what happened from that point on, I was at work, and they told me, you've been absent for these many days, you've been late, you've been coming in, not on time and stuff. And I said, no, that can't be me. The guy showed it to me all in front of me on a piece of paper, and I still denied it. That's not me. I'm talking about coming to work with a pair of Converses with cardboard in my sneakers. I'm talking about coming to work with a trench coat, summer, winter, spring, with safety pins on it. You know, I'm talking about this trench coat was so bad, the reason why I was coming in late so that nobody would see me hanging up amongst the other coats. I would like put it up there, then close all the other coats in with it, figuring nobody would know that's my coat. And I would wait till everybody got their coats before I left work. So that would be the last coat hanging. You know, it was a real tragedy, you know, the way I was living. I was making good money only to turn it over to somebody else, you know. What I know today, if I knew what I knew back then, I wouldn't have did it. I shared in a meeting not too long ago, if somebody came up to me and told me to smoke this, you would have paranoia. It would take all your money. It would have you knock your mother down the stairs. It would have you locked up in a room with three flashlights and a hammer. You know, I mean, if somebody told me that that's what would have happened to me if I would have smoked that, I don't think I would have smoked it, you know? Since y'all thought about the three hammers and a flashlight, I want to tell you a little bit about the story behind that. The purpose of that. They say we have tools around here. When you use it, you have tools also. And like, those were my tools. I had to have three flashlights in case one burned out. I have another one because I was looking for something. And the hammer was for the paranoia. If anybody was going to come through that door, I would have had to use the hammer. So that's what, those were my tools back then. But my job told me that I needed some help. They told me that I needed to go into a program. I told them, sure, okay, because I needed that job. That was my money. That was my supplier. And I couldn't let that go, so I had to do whatever they said. So they got me into a rehabilitation program, you know, a 30-day program. And while I was there, the first week they had me in like this nursing unit place. I was in denial. They had me putting puzzles together, and I thought I was crazy. You know, they got me in these Johnny's and pajamas, and I'm putting puzzles together. Something's wrong with this picture. How did I end up here? You know, and every day I would see these people running by the window, just running. You know, and I couldn't figure out who they were. I really couldn't. Until one day after the week, they transferred me over into the units. And they told me I would be on the coke track. The coke track was every morning you get up, you gotta exercise. You gotta run. You know, something I've never done before. So every morning I was one of those people running by. And as I was running by, I would look at the people putting the puzzles together and say, yeah, I used to be there. But that's what they were doing. They were running by looking at us. You know, we were looking at them. And we couldn't figure out who they were, you know. So that was the best vacation I ever had, you know, because I was away from me, my addiction. I was in a safe environment. I was with, we had like abundance of food, you know. I mean, you know, it's all you can eat, and you try to put everything on your plate because you don't think you're going to be able to go back and get it again, you know. I mean, two bowls of cereal, you know, extra eggs, bacon, and sausage. You know, I ate like that every morning. It was good. It was good. You know? Until, like, I learned that I can get up and go get more. You know, it was a learning process for me. I'm talking about this whole journey is a learning process for me. You know? And then it was time for me to leave. You know, that program has taught me about meditation and stuff. It was like teaching me how to go to bed at night, you know, how to be peaceful with myself, because like for so long when I was using, I was like up at night. And when the sun came up and the birds started chirping, I'm like, where did the night go? You know, so they were teaching me how to lay down, because when I laid down at night, my brain wanted to stay up and talk to me. You know, so they put us in this room with this pillow and made us listen to the ocean and soft music and all like that to help us fall asleep. You know, I'm talking about peace. You know, so I learned that process, and it was time for us to move on. They wanted me to go to a halfway house. I said, oh no, here they go again trying to tell me where to go. You know, and I'm grateful for that, because if I would have went back home, I'm talking about my old surroundings. I'm talking about a room where I lived my whole life using. You know, I didn't know how to steal because I didn't go downtown. I didn't know how to travel anywhere because I didn't have no money. You know, so I'm glad they taught me to go to that halfway house, because at that halfway house I found a power greater than myself. Because at that halfway house they told me I had to get on my knees at night and pray, you know, to help me remove this obsession and get up in the morning and ask for forgiveness and thankfulness in the morning and stuff. So I did that on a daily basis until I left this halfway house, and then I had to find out, who am I talking to? You know, this power greater than myself. I had to go where people was talking about this power greater than myself to learn more about it, because I really couldn't believe, you know, I just couldn't believe that this was working for me. I was going to meetings at that time, and like, they talk about anyone. I was judging myself, you know. Here I am, how can I go up into meetings where I was like sexually oriented with the same sex? They won't understand me, you know. how can I go in there lusting after the same sex? They won't understand me. I need to be in a separate society. I can't go around those people. They don't know me. I can't share what I want to share because they don't know me. You know, but I did it anyway. You know, I had to keep coming with, this was the only thing that was working for me to stay clean. But something happened along this journey. I mean, they started hugging me, you know. And like some of the men, when they hugged me, they gave me a rub, and I was instantly like, it kept me coming because. I mean, they say whatever keeps you coming around here. And like, and I said, they'll be at the meeting next week, and I'm coming there to get that same hug because I'm in love. Now, I'm gonna get that one day, you know. But the only thing I started to do was gather time around here and take on newcomers, drive, you know how people need rides and all like that. So I was giving rides to newcomer and still doing my same old behaviors. You know, they call it 13 stepping and stuff. I just call it my same old behaviors, you know. So, but through this process, I've grown. Because they say this is a long journey. I've been on this journey for over 20-some years. The first part of the journey was a kind of a little rocky and stuff. I fell down a couple of times only because I met this newcomer. You know, they did what I wanted to do. They liked doing it, but I paid a price for it. Because the person was still active, you know? So I fell a couple of times through all the hurt and pain that they caused me. I couldn't deal with my feelings, you know? It was so hard coming around here. They talk about anyone. It was hard coming around here dealing with my sexual orientation, not understanding and not knowing about it. But dealing with that, also dealing with the hurt and pain that it was causing me in this program. I just couldn't understand it, why I kept relapsing until it hit me. They said, just say no. You know, apply the first step, the second step, and the third step. So I looked into those steps. I said, I can use it on human beings also. You see, I wanted to get better around here. I wanted to get well. I needed to clear up some issues in order to deal with who I was. You know, so I'd done that. I was able one day in a detox, I worked in a detox, and this person came through there. Over, I would say, a 4 to 8 year relationship, they came through there, and I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so, like, I had to say no, no more. And I needed that person to say no, that it would, I mean, to say yes, that we were no more. So they did that, and instantly I was free, you know. But through now getting rid of some of that baggage, I started to look at me. I got tired of going to conventions, looking at the mirror to see who was looking back at me. The mirror played an important part in my recovery. In the beginning, it gave me that desire and that feeling that I needed to stop. Because like I said before, I went to my job and stuff. The reason why I went to my job, it wasn't because I was late. It wasn't because like I was calling out a lot. It was because I had a desire. I remember looking in that mirror just before I was gonna call the drug man to come and give me something else. And something told me, you know, cause you don't want the drug man to see how bad you're doing. So it was like, I had to wash my face at least. So I washed my face and something told me to look at yourself. I was in my 20s and said, do you wanna live like this for the rest of your life? So I had to think about that. Am I still gonna do the same thing when I reach 40? And then I figured, like, who's this talking to me? So as I drew myself closer to the mirror, all of a sudden darkness came. And I like familiarized that darkness with death. So I backed up from the mirror and said, wow, you got a problem. That's how this journey started for me. But getting back to the mirrors in the hotel, you know, the mirrors popped up again in my life on this journey. It's so strange how it like saved my life, and then it gave me another lesson. You know, this lesson that I'm talking about, I overcame this lesson because this lesson was about vanity, you know? So like, you know how like before you walk out that door, that hotel room, they have them huge mirrors and you gotta walk by them? That same voice said, look at yourself. That don't look good. You know, so I'm like thinking this outfit that I had on didn't look good because now vanity is playing on me and stuff. So I had to change 3 or 4 times only to put the same outfit back on again. And I said to myself, I dare anybody in this convention to say that don't look good. Because all it would have probably made me do was go right back upstairs and start that process all over again, changing into 2 or 3 outfits, learning how to accept myself for the way I look. That was that process. That's what it taught me. I don't care how I look no more because I came a long way. I didn't used to look like this. I had many problems. Like growing up, I hated the word skinny, thin, because that's what I was. I was the smallest one in my high school. Summertime came, I didn't wear nothing short sleeve or short pants because I didn't like myself. A stigma. Yeah, right. Now here I am, a stigma. I had something done to me that got me to having sex with other men. I didn't like myself because I didn't like the way I looked. You know, and they talk about anyone. How am I gonna come into these halls with all this I'm carrying, all this I've got to bear? They told me the first thing you had to do was love yourself around here. So I had to learn, like, this is what God made, and I need to do the best that I can with it. So I learned around in this program, I learned to love myself. You know, there's some people that walk around here with them long robes and those gowns that like to judge. I learned to get over that. You know, this is me today. This is my life. This program has taught me truly a lot on this journey, and I'm still learning. They talk about anyone. I can truly say I'm that anyone because I stuck and stayed. You know, I don't care how I look. The outside, the inside, whatever. What counts is on the inside is me, getting to know myself. And funny thing happened on this journey and stuff. The person, like I said, I was 13 and an 11-year-old person. The guy, we were grown and we was both in the fellowship. And I got a phone call one day. You know, I haven't seen this person in a long time, and I got a phone call saying, like, I just wanted to call you and say I'm sorry. You know, if I wouldn't have done that to you, you probably wouldn't have turned out the way you are. And I couldn't say nothing after that. I just couldn't say nothing after that at all. And I said, okay, thank you. And I hung up the phone. Because that was a learning process for me too. I had to go back and make some amends too. You know, because what was done to me, I turned around and did it to somebody else. You know, so that got me enough courage that I need to do some healing around here. And like, these steps has taught me a lot. I'm still learning, still to this day. And like, they say you could change things around here, you know. And I had to look at my life like, okay. Like I said in the beginning when I came around here, the drug, it was like, do I want to live like that for the rest of my life? And like, now I'm a homeowner and stuff, and it's like, I want to settle down. I want a life. Now I want to figure out how do I want to live my life, you know? Just because something was done to me, is that the type of life I want to live? You know? I mean, is it right or is it wrong? You know? So I'm dealing with that now. Learning process, you know? It's like you find out a lot of things about your life around here. A hell of a lot, you know. I can remember you know, asking this girl, say, like, you know, I want to go steady with you, but I brought it out in the wrong way. She thought I was proposing. I mean, I didn't know because I didn't know, you know. It's a learning process around here, you know. I didn't know how it was supposed to come out, one knee or whatever, you know. So, and I gave her something, and she had turned it down, and she said something profound to me. She said, I thought you didn't like women, you know. And, like, I went all the way back to when I was a child again. That this wasn't done to me. I mean, this was done to me. I didn't do this by myself, you know? So I'm still learning around here. If you're in here today, they talk about anyone. Any one of us in here is an anyone. We all made it to these halls in Narcotics Anonymous. We brought ourselves. This program has taught me how to get in touch with myself, just as it's teaching you all how to get in touch with yourself, learning to love yourself. Things around here don't matter what people say, because if it did, it would hurt a lot of us. We would never come back. They say the only requirement around here is that desire, you know. I'm staying on this journey. I'm staying on this path because I have never been on a path like this before. I'm discovering a lot of things. You know, and like I thought I didn't have no friends around here, and like I have a lot of support, you know, they commend me on all these things I put together, service work and things I do for my fellow people, because I can't do for myself sometimes. I have all this love inside of me that I'm learning how to like keep some for myself, you know, only through Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and for that I thank you. And I thank you, and I thank this committee, I thank this convention, and I thank you for being here. Keep coming.
Topic, being old in recovery? No.
Yes.
No, anyone is welcome.
Anyone is welcome.
Even the old guys. No, I love him. My dear friend Eddie, going to share with us this evening on anyone's welcome. I guess if we're welcome, that means anybody, right, Eddie?
My name's Eddie. I'm an addict. Hey. And Darryl is not alone. I think every one of us comes in here feeling different. You know, I think a lot of us die from terminal uniqueness. You know, I think we can all get up here and we can all relate to feeling different, not part of, shunned. You know, I can get up here and say that I was different because, you know, I'm an addict that was born in Ireland. You know, and hell, that's real different. I can say I'm an addict because I had red hair, freckles, and buck teeth, and I knew I didn't fit in anywhere. See, I thought that everybody else was born and given a set of instructions, and they left me out. You know, I thought they skipped me on a line somewhere. And then I come into Narcotics Anonymous and find a whole bunch of people that didn't get instructions either. You know, I had a... Let me put it this way. I had a symptom that was looking for a disease. And I used many different symptoms trying to cure. Addiction is a disastrous attempt at self-cure. You know, I medicated myself for 18 years. And obviously, I'm older than 18. You know, Paul likes to crack on my age, but he ain't that far behind. I mean, AARP has sent him something in the mail, too. you know, when they say anyone, you know, I have to go back a little bit when we're talking about the third tradition here. And the third tradition states, we all know that the only desire, I mean, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using drugs. You know, if it was using people, none of us are qualified. You know, but it's specific to drugs. Okay, and alcohol is a drug. But when you go back to the earth, when they first formulated, and we these traditions were taken from AA, and the tradition was formulated because in early AA, they had small membership, and addiction, heroin addiction in particular, which was my bailiwick, a guy came in cross-addicted, and they were afraid to let him in. They were afraid to let him in because, I mean, what are people going to think of us if we have a heroin addict here? And the discussion, this is serious, the discussion went on for a while, and then somebody said the important thing, what would the master do? End of discussion. End of discussion. That really is the end of discussion. We cannot judge. If this group here was to come up with membership requirements, none of us would qualify. None of us would qualify. I mean, when I came in early on, I thought pot smoking was not, yeah, that was okay. You can't be no addict. Well, look, let me define first and foremost. I got clean in 1981 BC. That's before crack. Now, I had some asshole try to point out to me that he was smoking crack in 1981. I said, well, you were a pioneer then, motherfucker. I never heard of that shit where I was, okay? It's a little hard to do research when you're a heroin addict. You got a full-time job, you know what I mean? You ain't looking for all the alternatives. It's doing the job for you. And then, but let me tell a little bit of my story. I was born in Ireland. I came to Brooklyn, New York when I was about approximately 12 years old. All right, any Brooklyn in the house?
Yeah.
All right. Any New York in the house?
Yeah.
All right. And one thing about addicts, we quickly adapt to change for the worse. We have that talent. We definitely have that talent. So about it, I'll describe my first encounter. And you talk, I already described I was 15, I had this red hair, flaming red hair, I had freckles, I felt like I didn't belong. I was hanging out with a bunch of guys on Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn, and I knew they didn't like me. I knew I didn't fit in, I knew they didn't like me. Okay. And I knew some of them wanted to kick my ass. So a friend of mine said, listen, let's go on up to this rooftop, and he had a quart of beer. And I tell you, something miraculous happened on the way down. The world changed after that quart of beer. It became a warm and wonderful place. And I knew everybody loved me and wanted to be my friend. By the way, that's called a spiritual awakening. As a result of some spirits. And I kept searching for that same feeling for the next 18 years. Because I felt like I fit in, right. I felt like I belonged, I felt I had a place in the universe, and I felt connected. And I chased that feeling, I chased it. I never was much of a pothead, I only smoked it 2,000 or 3,000 times. But I went through the regular, I went to cough medicine, pills. I'll tell you, one time I was so bad on pills, I walk, you know, you talk about geeking and paranoia. I've taken a couple uppers, and I walk in and I see some cops in a restaurant. So, you know, the next best thing to do is swallow the rest of them. Now, I got to describe the outcome of this. I knew some people were banging on the bathroom door, but I wasn't paying no attention to it at my house. But I immediately acquired my dentist license, and I took out a bad tooth with a spoon that evening. But you know what? I thought, you see, the thing about addiction is that we think that shit's normal. you know, we think that, you know, doesn't everybody do that? Doesn't everybody do that? You know, and what happened, when I was, and I, you know, once again, I'll mention my age, but it's amazing. You know, when I came in here today, I came to the program committee, and, you know, this thing had turned around in the wind, and the guy turned to me and says, just a minute, sir. People were not addressing me as sir back then, believe me. They were saying, like, get the fuck out of here. You know, but about age 19, I was drafted. I was in the sent to Vietnam. And in Vietnam, I acquired a habit of smoking heroin. But see, I thought I was a hip 19-year-old off the streets of New York. And when they told me I was smoking this stuff, I said, man, you don't get addicted to anything you can smoke. You gotta be shooting that stuff to get addicted. Well, one day I didn't get none. Learned another lesson. Came back, had a heroin habit. Came back, took me about 4 or 5 days. This is back in 1970. In 1970, President Nixon had done a wonderful thing, he thought. He was eliminating all the drugs. He stopped all the pot from coming in and created a bunch of heroin addicts. That's the political wisdom of our government, I guess. But you know, so I quickly switched and I wound up in a treatment program, an early treatment program. For those of you that are coming around Narcotics Anonymous, it wasn't always here. I just want you to know that. You need to be grateful for the fact that it is here. It wasn't available to me in 1970, so I was in a drug treatment called Early One, where the director had 3 years, the staff had a year and a half. Nowadays, I let them go get coffee for me. But back then, they were gurus, and the thing was encounter therapy. It was a therapeutic community. Now, they've gotten a whole lot better. First and foremost, let me express my gratitude because they saved my life. They kept me off the street for a year, but I would have died. Because I was from a war, I got out of a war crazy with addiction and an addiction. Those two combinations, you don't last very long. And so they saved my life for a year. But they had, back in 1970, there was a concept that said that alcohol and drugs are separate addictions. So what they said, told us, was that after you got to be an elder, you could drink. Needless to say, we had a high relapse rate, like about 100%. And I don't know about you, but when I got drunk, I went back to my drug of first choice. And it was a gateway. It was just a gateway drug. I can relate. What I like to remember, I like to remember, keep in my mind, is, you know, we all have snapshots. And my snapshot is I was on my way to get high, knowing, and it was Flacco's house in Brooklyn. And you know Flacco wasn't in the high rise, okay? He wasn't in the luxury building. I knew the cops knew what he was doing, but I was sick. And I was sick, I didn't give a damn, you know. If they had, the Marine Corps surrounding the place. I don't care if the SWAT teams were out, I'm getting some. I'm getting you some. So I come out, I got my stuff, I'm out. Got a hand on my shoulder. So once again, I swallow this shit. But you know, dope don't do no good, swallow. So I get to my hallway, and I throw it up, take it out of that puke, take it upstairs and shoot it up. Normal behavior, of course, once again. Normal behavior. I remember that because I got to remember where I came from. You know, today it's not like that. Today it's not like that. I sent some money to a friend. It was a girl and a friend, okay? And I had to send it to Western Union, you know, and I'm on the phone, and these people are telling me that I can't, they're declining it. And today I get an attitude. Because wait a second, you're telling me I can't transfer funds from my account. You know, and I proceeded to tell them what I thought of their service. But you know, it wasn't angrily. It was what it was saying is, you're not going to treat me like that. Because today, I got a lot more self-worth than that. Okay? I've been clean for a long time. My life is not the same. If your life is the same after that, you got a problem. You got a problem. This is about recovery. Not staying, you know, people talk about repeating old behavior. That ain't old behavior. That's current behavior. If you're doing it now, it ain't old. What I can tell you is that in 26 years, the person inside has changed. Okay, the person inside has changed, and it is a result of coming to rooms like this, dealing with people like you. Okay, when we talk about, you know, acceptance, we talk about compassion. Really, what we're talking about is love. We will love if you. Let me see the hands of the people who have got less than a year in this room. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. No, the reason, people ask me, why do you keep coming around after so long? You know, you got yours. I know how I got mine. I'm not stupid. I may be an addict, but I ain't stupid. Okay. My sponsor said if he could ever find a thing, my sponsor's from D.C. D.C. in the house? Yeah. My sponsor told me, he said, look, when I was out there, if I could find something good that I could get on a roll, I'd stay on it. I found something good. I got on a roll, and I stay on it. I know where I got. I come around because for the newcomer, I come for the newcomer to prove to them that you can have long-term good recovery, okay? Your life will change in ways you can't even think about, okay? The old-timers used to tell me, oh, man, life will get better beyond your wildest dreams. I said, you old fool, you don't even know what my dreams are. My dreams have changed. You know, my dreams have changed. It doesn't involve 15 women anymore. A lot of my dreams have come true. And I'll tell you what some of my dreams have come true are, okay? I have raised 3 children that are in recovery. Yeah. I have helped bring them into recovery. I've been there for 26 years, okay? I've been with them when they needed me. That's a gift of recovery, okay? Being able to be there for people that you love is a gift of recovery, okay? My daughter, who's now 23, she was 3.5 years old. She had open heart surgery for a heart defect when she was 3.5 years old. I went up to New York. I lived in D.C. at that time. I went up to New York Hospital at 2 o'clock in the morning. She came out. And let me tell you something. I was so scared for 6 hours of surgery. I was more scared than I was in Vietnam, because in Vietnam I had some medication. And I was going through these feelings, and she came out at 2 a.m. and she asked for her father, and that made it all worthwhile. I knew then I had been given a gift. You know, I had been given a gift, a priceless gift. You know, 3.5 years ago, my daughter, you know, well, let me put it this way. My daughters have taught me a lot, okay? And they've taught me certain rules about dealing. You know, I've come up with certain rules with dating, you know. And by the way, people outside the program have problems too. You know, they got some hang-ups. They just don't use over them. But I tell them, you know, number one, if the guy's 35 years old living at home, You know, he's still living with mama, don't do it. Number two, car don't stay in the shop more than 2 weeks. and he ain't consulting for the state of Maryland in the unemployment situation. He's a bum. And number four, I tell him, listen, you know, I raised you right. I raised you to marry some guy, get involved with some guy with some letters after his name, like MD, JD, JD, you know, lawyer, not ADD, ADHD. Everything but a goddamn GLB. So they taught me a lot. Anyway, my daughter makes a typical mistake. And so she got to come home. She comes home, and she comes home with the baby. That, by the way, they do leave, but they do come back. And they bring little ones with them. And I was able to be there. I was able to be there for her. I was able to provide a home. Okay, I was able to provide. And that nut that she was married to decided he wanted to go for custody. And I was able to provide, you know, for legal assistance. And then we found out that the child was special needs. She had, the hospital had screwed up, and she had cerebral palsy as a result of oxygen deprivation. And what I got, let me change that. It's not special needs, she's a special child. Yeah. A special child. Because what I used to do for 3 years, I would go down every morning, get that child, change her, and when she smiled at me, that lit up my entire day. Okay. That made my day. Still today, yesterday, before I came here, I stopped to see her. Because today, she has her own home. Okay, she got her own home. My daughter today, who came into the program 7 years ago, I had to pick her up off the street. She was a heroin addict. I guess it must be genetic. Today she has her own home. She went to school, finished school while she's in the program, got her nursing license, is now self-sufficient. You know, I stopped by to see her, and that little girl's face lit up again, and she started clapping, and she came and gave me all kinds of kisses. I could not get that feeling in a syringe or a bottle or anywhere else. That's what I, you see, what I was looking for in that syringe, what I was looking for in that bottle, what I was looking for, I found here. Okay? The problem is I have to work for it. If you're new and they tell you it's just going to get automatically better, they're lying to you. You gotta work for it. You gotta put some effort into it. You know, you gotta get a sponsor. You gotta go to meetings. You know, you gotta work the steps. No, you don't got to. We suggest you do. But we also suggest when you jump out of an airplane, you take a parachute with you too. It might be a good idea. It might be a good idea. But, you know, what I am on a daily basis is grateful. You know, I remember that guy in the hallway. You know, I remember that guy. I remember that same person stealing his mother's pennies and watching her cry while I did it. You know, and if you want to talk about shame and remorse and guilt and all that crap, that's what I came in with. Today, and I heard some of the most profound statements I've ever heard, I've heard in these rooms. There's a lot of wisdom in here, okay? You can't get this at the corner. You can't get this at the shooting gallery. You can't get this at the crack man's house. You know, they'll tell you, oh, you feel bad. Yeah, you should. Yeah, ditch the bitch. You know, they'll give you some profound advice. You know, oh, yeah, get rid of her. Yeah. You don't need that job anyway. You know. One of the most profound statements I've heard is, if you want to stop feeling guilty, stop doing guilty things. Then you won't feel guilty anymore. You know, if you want to, they told me that self-esteem is earned. You want to feel better about yourself, do good things. You want to feel bad, do bad things. You know, the reason I feel good today is I do esteemable things. I go to work. I show up for life. I go to work every day. I try to help another addict. You know, I'm constant contact. I got them on my family. I can't get away from them. But 90% of my friends are in the program. 90% of my friends. Because you know what? The finest people I know are in these rooms. Okay, the best. These people are the life of the party. And they survived long enough to get in here. You know. And you know what? Some of my best friends have yet to come through those doors. You know, that's why I'm here. I'm here because I was also told if I don't give it back, I don't get to keep it. You know, I have watched people come around. I've watched people, and there's a certain pattern that happens after years. What happens is that being in recovery is like a country and western song being played backward. You know, the dog comes back, the cat comes back, the wife comes back, the trailer comes back, the job comes back. Okay, but then what happens after a couple of years, people say, well, I got mine, screw you. Wow. Stop coming. Wow. And you know what happens after that? They go back out. They go back. You see, I don't need to repeat. I don't need to do that. I don't need to do that. I'd much rather, it's much easier to stay clean than to get clean.
Yeah.
Much easier. Life hasn't changed. My perception of life has changed. Okay? How I perceive it. And today I perceive it a whole lot different. It's not to be endured, it's to be enjoyed. You know, it's to be appreciated. You know. And as I do get older, as I look over at Paul, but as I do get older, it changed again. I think I've spoken long enough. I'd like to welcome all the people that had a year. And what I'd like to say to you is that you already met the requirement for membership, so just keep coming back.